From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Russia's president proposed some major changes to the country's constitution at his report to the legislature last week. We discussed those changes in depth with Moscow-based analyst Mark Sloboda via Skype on Monday. Mark, welcome back.
Don, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR with you.
Thank you. It's our honor and pleasure to have you with us. So, the annual Federation speech by President Putin got moved up to the beginning of the year, which is apparently a novelty, and with the expressed desire to sort of look at things coming up in the year and have an opportunity to have a hand in the planning of that from, you know, laying that out in the speech. A lot of new stuff, apparently, including some pretty essential or interesting changes in the government. You want to discuss that?
Sure. Putin was giving the annual State of the Federation speech to both houses of the Russian legislature, the Duma and the Federation Council. The Federation the State of the Federation speech is practically analogous to the U.S. State of the Union speech, in both form and in substance generally. Although it has to be said that I think they blow a little less smoke up the butt in during Russia's State of the Union Federation speech than they usually do during the State of the Union speech in the U.S. I.e., if things are getting bad or something is bad, they'll actually recognize that rather than just say that everything is greater than ever before continually.
Right.
Putin is giving the speech, and exactly to that, he spends a good at least a third of the first part of the Federation speech speaking about a kind of a favorite subject of his in the government, and that's the demographic problem that Russia faces, in that it has right now it has a slightly declining population, this is a part of the what they call the graying phenomenon that is affecting nearly all first world countries, in that women with starting careers, with access to birth control, the changing changing preferences of society for family size ever smaller means that across the first world, birth rates, natural birth rates are falling. Women, right. Families are having less children. Seldom do they reach the replenishment rate, the natural replenishment rate of two, right? Two children for a mother and a father, or whatever they have in the U.S. these days in terms of family. Russia is not immune to that problem. It has had if the birth rate fell with the 90s and the collapse of the economy and society in the chaos of the 1990s under the Boris Yeltsin kleptocracy, when the economy collapsed and the society and then public order fractured and the country nearly fell apart, the birth rate went way down. And then during the mid 2000s, or I should say the late 2000s to a few years ago, Russia was enjoying a positive population growth, slightly positive. And this was because there was an increase in the natural birth rate with improving economic conditions.
That's right.
Also, there was a large degree of immigration. And for quite a few years, Russia was the number two in the world after the United States for both legal and illegal immigration. And a lot of that shocks a lot of Westerners, a lot of Americans, like who would want to live in Russia?
Well, actually, as a destination, right.
Yeah, yeah, lots of people do, particularly from the former Soviet Union and Asia and so on. They all across Central Asia, the Caucasus, and so on. They speak Russian as a second language. There's economic opportunity. Often the conditions are better for social mobility than at home. So Russia is actually a quite big destination for immigration. Now, over the last few years, they've dropped from the number two spot as Germany started massively importing Syrian refugees. And so on, but it's still up in the top few. But that immigration number has now gone down slightly. The natural birth rate is experiencing a predicted dip because of the 1990s effect, as the children of that generation are now entering their childbearing years.
Right, the ones that weren't born are not having children now, right?
Right, and so Russia is now experiencing a slight population decline again. It's expected, and it's something that most countries are, first world countries are facing. Some of them, like the United States and the UK, are easily able to surpass it with immigration. Other countries, a lot of European countries, the immigration isn't even enough. And it's not just Russia that is experiencing this population effect. Japan is one of the hardest countries because of their dislike of immigration completely as a society, and coupled with the low birth rate, and you know, the society is getting older and older and less able to support itself. There's a whole lot of not just social but economic questions when it comes to pensions and social security.
Japan's is the lowest since record keeping began in 1899. I mean, it's really low for them.
Brilliant. Yep. So, I mean, it's not a unique problem to Russia. It's often painted that way. And like I said, some countries are able to offset it with immigration more than others. And Russia is better at it than almost any country in the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. But they still don't quite reach the same levels of immigration that offset it, like the United States the UK. So anyway, the president was addressing the government's plans going forward to help combat this. They want to raise payments to children that have more families and increase their social benefits and do everything to increase the social prestige of having more children and so on, which the president has talked about before. It's a problem, you know, again, a common problem that the Russian government has been doing quite a lot to address, with some a little bit surprising degree of efficacy. Right. Not miraculous, but, you know, it's working better than a lot of the critics thought it would. Right. And the population growth in Russia is expected to go slightly positive again around 2024, 2025. But again, this is a long term problem that all countries of the first world are facing. And considering the environmental and the overpopulation problems that the world is facing, I'm not always quite so sure that it's a bad thing that populations across the first world are decreasing. But suddenly the president shifts topic and introduces something that really no one at all was expecting. Very, very little word of this was leaked out. And in fact, many of the government's own officials, the regional governors, the legislatures, everyone present, they weren't aware of this either. And this is Putin is putting forward a proposal for not a radical, but a significant amount of constitutional change. He put forward a series of proposals of basically 11 points to address that he wants to see the Constitution amended. This will be dealt with by the cabinet, the new cabinet. At the same time, he also announced the resigning, basically the dissolution of the cabinet, including the prime minister, prime ministry, Dmitry Medvedev, who's been his longstanding prime minister. And Medvedev will not be coming back. He's already chosen a new prime minister to lead this forward. And that prime minister is the former head of the Federal Tax Service, basically someone seen as a loyal but competent technocrat. And that's Mikhail Mishustin. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. It's a new name for everyone. Surprisingly, there's not a lot even Putin's critics have to say bad about him, because he has evidently achieved some phenomenal things at the tax service. His big issues are the digitization of the economy and government services, and he's done very well in the Federal Tax Service. So even though he doesn't have a large amount of shall we say, political capital, or support, or even political ambition. It's kind of hard for someone in the Federal Tax Service, even heading it to think of being prime minister or something someday. But here it is. Putin wanted a dark horse candidate outside of kind of a neutral figure with what's left of the idea of the competing Kremlin clans.
Right.
And someone who is technocratically capable. He's seen as largely a placeholder figure, the basic crux of these proposals is to shore up Putin's system, the system that he has created, as he intends to step down at the end of his fourth term now as president in 2024. He wants to shore up the system. This constitution is basically the same as it has been since 1993, when Boris Yeltsin implemented it. It is a super presidential system. Yeltsin was seizing a lot of powers at the time. And a lot of what Putin addresses in these changes is reducing the powers of the presidency. Not hugely. It still remains a presidential republic. It's not becoming a parliamentary system, but it is definitely shifting some powers away from the presidency towards the Duma, the Russian parliament, refining the system basically so that no one else in the future can do what he did and serve four terms as president, out of fear that someone in the future may be less honest or abuse the powers and the system and so on. So he's closing those loopholes. He's transferring some powers. And that's the crux of these proposals. And he thinks he wanted to dissolve the government. It's not quite sure who will be coming back in the cabinet and who won't. We already know that the prosecutor general is being replaced, Chaika. Like we said, Medvedev is gone and Mishustin is in as the prime minister. And there's a big question mark about Lavrov. Will he finally be allowed to retire as he wants to? Mm. Or will Putin say the country needs you for another few years?
Hope so. The world needs him, really.
That's something. But anyway, so these proposals, they're of course being completely propagandized and presented completely wrong in the Western press. They're being depicted as some way for Putin to hang on to power forever, as some type of immortal vampire sucking the blood out of Russian society, so on and so on.
Right.
But it's actually the opposite. That Putin is definitely stepping down. He will not be the president. He's not looking for some kind of trick. He's not changing the constitution to allow him to run for more terms as president. He's not trying to become the president of some joint Russian-Belarusian federal state, as a lot of Western commentators are projecting. All of those people who said all these things are wrong. Putin is not staying as the head of state. He's stepping down as president.
Right.
Now, what these proposals point towards is giving him some options going forward. He's still got another 4 years in office. What he's doing now is reassuring the elite that his system will continue. He's reassuring the public who wants stability, that still remembers the chaos of the 90s and wants to make sure that the stability and order that he put in place over the last 20 years isn't all tossed aside as soon as he's gone.
Right.
So the Western commentators that were hoping that he's just going to disappear into the political ether and never be heard of again, well, that's not going to happen either.
Right.
And so he basically left a couple options moving forward, depending on probably what events are looking like as we move closer to 2024 and the end of his fourth presidential term. If he decides that he needs a really active role to continue, in case there's another war, a global economic crisis, some types of black swans, what have you, then he could become prime minister again. And that right. option is left open. He'll have technically it's the parliament that actually has more powers, but as head of parliament, he'll certainly be able to shepherd those. Now, I don't think that is his preferred option. One, because Putin is tired. He does want to step down. He's given every indication of that. He's said it many times. And he really doesn't like the prime minister's job. He regards it as somewhat right. tedious. Putin likes concentrating on foreign policy, strategy, geopolitical issues, big things. He doesn't like hurting legislators. He doesn't like having to deal with the communists and the soft nationalists and Liberal Democratic Party of Russia. You know, they have to have their hands held and be assured that they have a place and so on. I don't think Putin really wants to be prime minister again. One of the other big options left that is left open in this is him taking a role as head of the state council. And this is a purely advisory board at present that serves to advise the president of the Russian Federation. It meets not regularly. It meets, you know, it's not constantly in session. It meets a few times a year, deals with specific issues. And it's composed of basically all of the regional governors and the governors, the heads of the different federal subjects, basically like the idea of the governors of U.S. states, right? There's some sub-state bodies in Russia that have some people on that too. But if you think of it as kind of a council of all of the governors of the various Russian states, right. As well as whoever the president appoints to that body, the president right. does have that power. And this is an advisory body. He wants to move it. One of his proposals is to move this body to a official part of the Constitution, an official advisory body to the executive branch, to the presidency. And he's not given any indication that he wants to increase the powers of this, but he does want it to make it official. And it will become basically like preserving Putin's role as the elder statesman or the father of the state, like Lee Kuan Yew did in Singapore, or like Nursultan Nazarbayev has recently done in Kazakhstan. And this would allow him to have a large degree of recognized soft power, just in case there was a radical disagreement between him and whoever the president is. You know, he hopes that it would be someone that he indicates he would like to have as a successor. But, you know, elections, even in Russia, anything can happen, even if they usually don't. Trump is – the United States is a perfect example of how anything can happen. So if he heads this up and it's given an official status, that would give him a great deal of soft power influence.
Right.
And I think it likely – this doesn't require a constitutional proposal, but I think it's also likely that they will make some changes to the structure of the Russian Security Council – very, you know, again, analogous to the U.S. National Security Council,
right.
such that former presidents will probably be given an, quote, unquote, honorary position on there. And again, the National Security Council serves to advise the president on big foreign policy, geopolitical, military strategy things. So I think if Putin has a place on the National Security Council and the State Council, where he feels he has significant soft power influence, I think that he thinks he can then shepherd through a succession probably of one or two times to make sure the system that he put in place is not all thrown out with the bathwater. So just quickly to go over what he proposed here. One is limiting the powers of the presidency. This is the power to appoint the prime minister would go from the president's office to the parliament, to the Duma. The Duma would gain the power to appoint their own prime minister, as well as deputy ministers and the ministers of the cabinet. That would move from the president's office to the parliament. And that's a definite major shift
for sure.
of power away from the president's office. And one that should be. I mean, the parliament should, the Duma should choose its own prime minister, I believe. The second one is to amend the procedure for appointing the heads of the various security agencies, right? Something like in the U.S., the Director of National Intelligence and the offices of Homeland Security. The president will still make these appointments, but he will have to have consultations with the Federation Council, which is the higher body of the Russian legislature, like the Senate.
Right.
So he would still have the power to appoint them, but he would have to consult with the Senate, basically, the Federation Council, before doing
like
so. So
the American system has
a slight limitation.
The American system has advising consent to the Senate for that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he would amend the clause limiting the president. Right now, the president is restricted to two consecutive terms. Meaning, and this is what Putin did. He served two terms as president. Medvedev came in for one term as president while Putin went to the prime ministership. Medvedev stood down and president was elected again for two more terms as president. He removes that. No one else can do that. He's removing the consecutive part in that so that it's now limited to two terms. It's preventing anyone else from doing what he did in the future, and it's also preventing him from ever becoming president again.
Right. So this is an FDR, only instead of dying at the fourth term, he's just helping to set the parameters. Yeah.
Exactly. He's raising the age requirements to be a candidate to be president from 10 years to 25 years. You have to live in the country for 25 years now to become president. He also bans foreign citizenship, that is dual citizenship, and foreign residency permits for judges, governors, some mayors, all federal lawmakers, you know, both houses of the Russian parliament, and government cabinet members. You're a Russian citizen and nothing else. You're not allowed to have dual citizenship or residency in another country, which is a badly needed national security thing, I believe.
Yep.
No dual loyalty.
Yeah, I mean, you have a number of things there, aside from the number of people that operated both as, European and Russian, because they were outside the country until after the Soviet period. You have also Israel, of course, which is a bedeviling thing here in the United States for some. And then the real thing, though, that's different is you have the other Soviet republics, where you had people that moved around the Soviet Union because it was one place or another inside the same nation state. And now, you know, being a citizen, say, of Ukraine and Russia is certainly a problem for someone inside the Russian government at this moment.
Exactly. And the next step goes even a step further in that direction. If you want to run for the presidency, you can never have held foreign citizenship or a foreign residency permit in another country, not just at the time of the election. If you want to be president, you can never have had that.
You have to be lifelong Russian.
What this is seen as doing, as preventing someone like Navalny, who lived and studied in the U.S. or the criminal oligarch in exile in the West now, Hodorkovsky, had seen as preventing some foreign asset like that from ever coming in and seizing the presidency in the country and you know, farming the country off, selling off all the natural resources to the U.S. or something
this
like
is,
that.
This is a real thing, you know, by the way. I'm looking at, you know, the peace efforts in Libya right now. And if you look at Haftar's, even though he's identified kind of with the Green Resistance, if you look at his resume, not only did he live in the U.S. for like 20 years, he lived in Langley, Virginia.
He was a CIS.
Okay. Right. Now he's not exactly the guy you'd want running your country. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know. Saddam Hussein. Right. But specifically for the Russian case, this is preventing someone like Mikhail Saakashvili.
Exactly.
Who was groomed by McCain, right, and studied and was trained up in the U.S. From seizing power in Georgia, or a John Guaido type figure in Venezuela. This is preventing the U.S. from playing games with that. You had to have been a Russian citizen all your life and not have lived an extensive amount of time, you know, as an official resident in another country. And that is a step meant to ensure your loyalty to the country. Okay, next is, again, making the State Council advisory body an official government agency in the executive branch to advise the president. He's going to grant the Federation Council, which, again, is the Russian Senate, the right to remove judges from the constitutional and supreme courts. This is basically an impeachment power like exists in the U.S.
Right.
There is the ability to impeach judges of federal and the Supreme Court in case of something extreme situation there. Not likely to be used, but, you know, it exists in case of it. He gives the constitutional court the right to review the constitutionality of federal laws before they are signed by the president. So this is another check and balance added into the system on the presidency and somewhat even on the parliament. Before the president signs something into law, the constitutional court has the right to review it and judge whether it is constitutional or not.
And then I guess he gets to put some people on there, so he's got some long arm protection going out of ways while they're still on the court.
Good. So he also wants to establish the mandatory indexing of the Social Security and minimum wage payments to Russia's poverty line. And this is shoring up, social safety net benefits in case of economic crisis or catastrophe again, to make sure that the worst off of society are not left completely destitute.
And this is in the Constitution, yes?
This is in the Constitution. What would probably be referred to in the U.S. as another instance of Russian socialism.
Yep. I was going to say 1936.
So, again, I don't see how anyone in the left can really oppose something like that being added to the Constitution.
For sure.
Now, the last one is to limit the supremacy of international law, be that international law like the UN Charter, or more specifically, it's interested in judgments like the European Court of Human Rights or other arbitration courts. Now, of course, those of us who believe in international law, this is, of course, not a great thing. And it was kind of interesting to think that Russia has had this, for those who didn't know it, that Russia has had this as part of their constitution up till now. But basically, the viewpoint is if the world's would-be hegemon, the United States, and its allies like the United Kingdom and other countries do not even recognize international law to rule over them, then how can Russia?
It's you know what?
This is geopolitics too limiting.
We're gonna go in deep diving into that one next week. We're out of time, but what's really interesting is, of course, the United States has that supremacy clause in the Constitution, where not just the Constitution but treaties are the law of the land, and of course they break them at will. So, Mark, we'll pick it up next week here.
All going to be decided by referendum. The Russian people have to approve it referendum, probably in May.
That's great, and so we're gonna follow this for sure. Mark, thanks a lot for your time as always and for your insight.
Thanks for having me, Doc.
Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York.
Thanks for listening.